It's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night. We are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight. We have our NBA finalists in place, Golden State and the LeBrons from Cleveland, as supporting cast has become more and more injured over the course of the season, and LeBron carrying a bigger and bigger weight on his shoulders, but has his team back in from after several years off in Miami. They are back in the NBA Finals playing the Golden State Warriors, first time in a long time for Golden State also. So very interesting NBA Finals coming up. The NBA draft later in the month of June, as the Pacers with the late lottery pick trying to figure out what to do with that and which Kentucky Wildcat they'd like to take, apparently, as they're all kind of ranked right around that slot. We've got plenty going on. We've got Reds baseball all week here for you on the air, and the baseball season well underway. About 50 games in, the Reds in fourth place right now in the very tough Central, but a lot going on there. But before we get on to all of that, we'll still stay with baseball. Indiana baseball over the weekend took the defending national champion Vanderbilt Commodores to the brink, but unable to close the door in the ninth inning. They were the home team, but the Commodores hit a two-run homer in the top of the ninth to knock them off. Hoosiers had to go on then and eventually lose to Radford in the loser's bracket. And Glass, I mean, they played, I can't say they played as well as you could expect, but they go down, they give Vanderbilt everything you can hope for out of the number three seed on the home turf there of the Commodores. And I think there were some questions. Certainly I had some questions. Maybe other people were more confident. You seemed to be that they belonged in the NCAA tournament. Coming out of it, though, sure seems like they did a pretty good job for themselves. And I think the Big Ten in general has seemed to do a decent job for themselves in this postseason. But they will not be moving on. They go down to Nashville, lose to Vanderbilt, and lose to Radford. But
pounding Radford 10-0 today.
Yeah, I mean, this is a defending national champion. This is not
it's not chopped liver.
Some
at all.
Average team.
So, well, that's the problem. When you get in as an at-large bid, you're at the mercy. Indiana went through that hosting 1 year at home, and then being a national seed the next year, and this year. Kind of like back in 2009 when they had to go to Louisville and play a really good Louisville team as they hosted a regional as well. And you got to take care of your home field, and that's what made last year's loss so disappointing to Stanford, because Stanford had to win three games in a row to do that, and they did. And that's what Indiana was faced with after losing on Saturday night to Vanderbilt. The game started late due to some bad weather down there. But the Hoosiers, Dave, if you noticed, six hits in that loss to Vandy, and then six more hits to Radford the second time around after, I think, 13 in game number one. So the bats went quiet. You can't score every run hoping that you get a couple wild pitches and an errant throw in the infield. You got to put some lumber on the ball. And Indiana just didn't come up with that. You could really say Brian Wilhite was their best hitter. And if you watched any of the post-game interviews about Wilhite after game one, he's just like, hey, I don't know where this has come from. I usually don't hit like this. I'm usually here to field and make plays on the defensive side of the ball. But Indiana struggled to pitch late. They struggled to pitch late again on Sunday afternoon and just didn't come up with any timely hits. As Joe accurately pointed out this morning, when Indiana lost the lead and trailed in game number three to Radford, gave up two in the eighth, and it was 100 wild pitches and 100 pass balls and 100 of this and 100 of that. Just it wasn't good baseball, and it looked like Indiana was out of gas. It looked like they thought, hey, we're going to take care of Vanderbilt. We're going to be on our way. Then Vanderbilt punches them in the gut on Saturday night, and then Sunday afternoon it didn't happen. And Joe pointed out accurately, the last six batters made outs for Indiana, so there was no late-inning magic. There was no late-inning rally for the Hoosiers, and a great learning experience. Chris Lemonis in his first season coming into a program that he had less than a year to put together, and he gets him as a wild card or whatever you want to call it, an at-large bid into the tournament. So I don't think you can be upset. You feel bad for the seniors, but as we remember, these are the same guys that played their freshman year at Sembauer and believed in something that was going to happen and saw the construction and believed that Tracy Smith was putting something together. And the last 3 years, tournament, 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 when was the last time a Big Ten team ever did that? I think the answer is never. I read somewhere, I believe that's the case. I don't think any Big Ten team has ever made it to three straight tournaments in a row or haven't in some time. So put a bow on it. It was a good season, but it was tough to see them go out the way they did. And a little of it was shooting themselves in the foot. If you go back to Saturday's game against Vanderbilt, you bring up one of the best hitters in the country who was, what, the most outstanding player of the World Series last year. And we learned after the game.
Top five draft pick this
year. Yeah, they try to pitch around him, and you can't pitch around a guy giving up a two-run home run into the right field or the left field seats or whatever it was. And that's tough. And if there's one question you're going to have is Ryan Halstead's one of your top appearance guys ever in the history of the game. You're the home team, and you bring in Luke Harrison, whose last two outings were starting pitching outings. Mm-hmm. You don't bring in your closer to get three outs, to go to the bottom tied when all you need is one run. Right. Now, how I understand baseball, and I'm not knocking Lemonis on this, but that's a decision that happened that we can talk about because it's out there. You bring in your closer when you're the home team because you only have to pitch him that inning. And then if it goes to extras because you don't score, then you bring the next guy in. You want the guy shut out, so you go score in the bottom of the ninth. See you later. Everything's all done. If you're worried about extra innings then, which I'm not putting words in his mouth or saying that he was, you're playing defensive baseball. And when you're playing –
you have to get to the extra innings before you can play
extra innings. You can't put the cart in the front of the horse for extra innings, and you're at the one of the best teams in the country, the defending world champions. You got to go out there and take it from them. And that wasn't going to happen. Vanderbilt wasn't going to kick it around the infield. They weren't going to walk the building. Right. Heck, how many times did Indiana strike out in the Vanderbilt game? 13, 11, 12? I mean, it was a lot. So they obviously had guys that could get it done, so you weren't going to get that many chances. And it just didn't work out. As the joke was, yeah, when did you think start pitching around the guy? Well, when the ball was going over the right field wall. So it didn't work out, and that looked to take the air out of the balloon for Indiana.
15 strikeouts
out of 27 outs. Well, that's tough.
And you mentioned getting the air taken out of him. I mean, mentally, you go down there, you've got him on the ropes, you've got a chance late in the game, and to have it given up like that, and, you know, again, knowing that you're trying to not give the guy anything to hit and yet accidentally give him something to hit, I think that makes it, at least mentally, I think that makes it even worse to swallow after the fact. And, showed some fight against Radford, but like you said, I mean, the gas is kind of out of the tank at that point in time. They did beat Radford the first time around.
They did. They got a great performance from a senior. Kyle Hart gave them exactly what they needed to have. They got some clutch hitting as well. Will Height, Deed Low, Hartong all contributing to all of that. You got a great effort from Efros, who came in and pitched lights out when he had to come in against Vanderbilt. He retired 16 of 20. I mean, that's
came into the third inning, pitched five more.
That's a fantastic performance, and outpitched one of the good kids for Vanderbilt to a degree. But when you have a chance to knock a team out like that, I think you've got to take the game by the scruff of the neck. And again, the Hoosiers didn't knock Vanderbilt out. They kept them around and kept them around. And great teams make plays. You know what that reminded me of? Chad Clark hitting a ball over the wall against Valpo. Valpo's got Indiana down 4-2, and it's whatever in the eighth or the ninth inning, and it's a walk off 3-run home run. I mean, that's how you win these things. You have to make plays. You can't hope plays happen. But it's a great start. You played enough freshmen, sophomores, and juniors where kids got their feet wet. You had a great senior class that led them, and nothing to hang their hats about at all. And moving forward, Indiana's going to have to replace some players, just like everybody does every single year. And to keep the streak going, Caleb Berger, I believe, was a freshman or a redshirt freshman as a pitcher. Christian Morris is sophomore or junior. You've got some arms. Efros will be a senior, I believe, next year. Is that right? I don't think Efros is a senior. I can't. These guys all run together for me. Because I did see, I saw some of them over there, some of them over here. But Didelo's a sophomore, and he was probably one of the better hitters on the team.
Efros is a junior.
Is a junior, great. Yeah. So he comes back. Will Height's going to come back as a senior. So you have guys that have been now through, Dave, three tournament runs and know what it takes to win when you're the underdog, what it feels like when you should win as the home favorite, and what happens when you run into a pretty good side. So the good news from Indiana, like we talked about last week, a month ago, 2 months ago, 6 months, 6 weeks ago, this wasn't a team that was – they were looking to stay – together and not have their season implode. So they find a way to make noise when they have to make noise. They brought it together what they did, but the old problems got them. When they hit really well, they pitched really well, but when they pitched really well, they didn't hit, and that's a bad combination on that.
Indiana finishes 1-2 in the tournament. Again, one of those two losses, taking Vanderbilt all the way to the ninth. A ninth inning home run wins it for Vanderbilt for their first loss, and then goes down to Radford. Iowa, a two seed, was 2-2, but eliminated Missouri State. State won that regional, and Michigan was a 3 seed. Also went 2-2, gave Louisville a couple of good games.
Great game. Same thing happened to them. Kid from Louisville hits a late 2-run home run and beats them. I think it was 3-3 or 3-2. Michigan, and I'm watching one on one iPad and one on the other iPad. I got it all going on there, but it was just tough. Illinois did what they needed to do. They swept out. Maryland plays tonight. UCLA late on the West Coast, 11 o'clock there. I think I just saw that the Big Ten is 10-7. Illinois is obviously through.
Yeah, they're 3-0.
They took care of Wright State. And, again, Michigan played well, but Louisville at home is something like, 12-0 in their last 12 NCAA games. So they take care of their business at home. It just shows you how tough it is to do, but you got to go out and play it. And, again, Big Ten's still alive, so we'll wish our new friends Maryland the best of luck. And Illinois, who has been in, the top 10 about the entire season.
And you mentioned Maryland. They won their first two games against the number 2 seed Mississippi and then against the number 1 seed UCLA. So it's UCLA now as the 1 seed who's having to come through the bottom of the loser's bracket. Playing Maryland late tonight, as that is out at UCLA.
11 p.m.
That's a late one. We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. Back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Thanks to J&S Locksmith for being with us, where you'll find everything for the residential or commercial outdoor technician. J&S Locksmith. You know, I've said 508 West 17th Street for about 8 years, and now my card is crossed off and says 4. So did they take up a whole block? Did they move?
I don't know. Shall I Google it?
Yeah, go ahead and do that, because I want to make sure we send our listeners to our sponsors at their proper location.
Is Google a sponsor?
No, they're not. They're the most efficient web search there is. Somebody asked me the other day, do you use Bing? And I said, for what?
Their website says 508 West 17th Street twice on their front page.
Sounds like, so we're going to get out the old marker. So thanks to the big helper here at the old studio for making
technical
sure that
difficulties
they do that.
In someone's mind, apparently.
Well, you know what you always do? Shoot first and ask questions later, because that's the way to do it. So let's do this again. J&S Locksmith, where you'll find everything for the residential or commercial outdoor technician, can be found at 508 West 17th Street here in Bloomington. Thanks for helping us out today, J&S.
Now I want to know who's at 408 West 17th Street.
You can go look when you go to J&S.
I don't think I should. 333-2665 is our phone number. Programming note, we got Reds baseball coming up. Not tonight, but the rest of the week. 7 o'clock all week, and then 4 o'clock on Saturday. The Reds are in Philadelphia Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then they've got San Diego coming to town on the weekend. And also on the weekend, we've got another attempt at the Triple Crown. Before we get to horse racing, though,
we have an update from the NCAA Vanderbilt Regional in lovely Nashville, Tennessee. At the end of the 6th inning, it is Vanderbilt 20 and Radford 2. No, I'm sorry, that's how many hits they have. 0. It's 20-0. Vanderbilt scored 3 in the first, 2 in the second, 4 in the third, 1 in the fourth, and 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. In the fifth.
You're saying 10.
Radford has thrown 1, 2, 3, 5. They're on pitcher number 6. The last guy that's pitched has pitched an inning and 2/3, 3 hits, no earned runs. Maybe they should have started him.
a little late.
Vanderbilt has 19, 17 hits, 19 RBIs. On the
four
day.
Four errors by Radford, by the way.
That's exactly right. And, So that's what's going down in Hawkins Field.
Nice.
And lovely Nashville. So Vanderbilt, let's do it this way. Radford on the end of some pain and suffering.
Feels any better, it's only 17 earned runs.
That stings.
Yeah, that's not very good.
That is ouch. That's painful.
So that's a shame, but either way, the Hoosiers are home. Before we leave baseball, though, and we mentioned Reds baseball, Having a tough time so far of it, but it's been a little bit of a strange year. Maybe not so strange in the Central, as the St. Louis Cardinals have the best record in baseball, which he seems to be.
No, and they win every game in the bottom of the ninth or the top of the ninth. They're like vampires. They're hard to kill off. And they're full of good pitching. They're full of good guys that get how they play. They get rid of Albert Pujols and get better. Just go ahead and figure that out for a minute. And you can't name three players on the Cardinals if you're not a Cardinal fan, which is fine. And that's why they're good. They don't have guys that are stuffing the stat sheet to the level of triple crown or leading the league in this or that and the other thing. They get guys that go out and just do work. And Nat Adams, their big power hitting first baseman, has been out. And what are they going to do? Well, they just plug another guy in. He comes in.
Now, long has Matheny been the manager, though?
I want to say 4 years, but.
Because they didn't miss a beat and they've gotten better.
They have, because you know why? If your pitching's good, they're good. But the other thing about their pitching over the years is, isn't Wainwright gone for the year? Again, he has problems. And last year, Waka had problems. And imagine if they put it all together for 162 games. Good gracious. They're playing 66 baseball. They're 20-6 at home. Look up their schedule. I want to say they lost six of their first seven, and they're 30. I think that's somewhere in there. They didn't start out very good, if I remember correctly. And now they are.
It wasn't that bad. It was 3-3.
All right. Well, okay. Yeah. So 33-14, or 30-14 since. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So the Cardinals are doing Cardinal-like things. The best thing that ever happened was the wild card. And two of them in each league, because it keeps teams alive. So if you don't get off to a flying start, your season isn't over. You can play yourself back into it. It might not be for a division title, Dave, but at least you have a shot at a wild card or two. And I'm not a big fan of a lot of things Bud Selig has done for baseball, but this is one of them because it makes sense. It makes games count. It makes games. It gives teams hope. You're not completely dead and dusted unless you are the Brewers, who have just 17 wins and 34 losses. And that's they win 17 in a row. They're 500. That's a little tough to do.
The four main starting pitchers right now, which does
Martinez,
not include
Waka.
All four of them with 10 starts each are all under 3.41
in the
ERA. That's pretty good. I don't care what stats you want to talk
about.
That one still works.
And they traded Shelby Miller to the Braves for Hayward, I believe. That's how that went down. And he was one pitch away from a no-hitter earlier in the year. So they must have enough pitching on the side of things. But the Reds did exactly what they needed to do, getting back to Great American Ballpark. I told Joe on Friday this is the start of the winning streak, and the Reds swept the Nationals, first-place Nationals, in the National League East, so my lucky prediction came true, and let's just hope they can put a few games together as they go to Philadelphia this week, Dave, and Philadelphia is not very good. The Phillies are only 19-33. They're 1-9 in their last 10. They've lost seven straight, so the Reds, again, you win three more in a row, and all of a sudden you're 25-27. Then you come home for San Diego, and the Padres, to my knowledge, are decent. They're 25-27 right now, and you take two out of three there, and you do this, and you do that, and then all of a sudden.
Yeah, Phillies right after.
And then the Phillies right back at you. Then you go to the Cubs. The Cubs are decent, four games over. Reds have always had good success in Wrigley. That's been the case. So it's not the end of the world. They're finding some bats. They're finding some more pitching. The Reds just riding up and down that roller coaster as well.
Well, you mentioned the roller coaster. It was a straight down for a little while there.
Yeah,
lost
nine straight
and 10 of 11. But turn it around, as you mentioned, against the first-place Washington Nationals.
Sometimes that's the teams you need to do it against. Sometimes the other team, if you're playing the last-place Brewers, they say, look, these guys stink too. They've lost eight straight. We're playing them. Let's go out and win. But
well, and the first-place Washington Nationals the last couple of years does not have that odd of a ring to it because they've been pretty darn good.
Oh, good pitching again.
But you go into the AL and outside of the Yankees, who are perpetually among the top in their division, you've got a couple number one teams right now. Some of the best records in baseball are a little surprising. The Minnesota Twins and the Houston Astros in particular. The Astros, a year or two ago, Sports Illustrated said they were going to be winning the World Series in 2016 or 2017.
Close.
That's a pretty big turnaround for a team that was horrendous. I mean, you talk about some of the worst teams in professional sports in the last 30 years. The Houston Astros, certainly their records the last couple of years have been that.
Yep.
I think last year was a little bit better, but before that it was
not
atrocious.
Much. Yep, they're doing it the smart way. They're doing it through the old Tampa Bay way, doing it through the draft.
Kids.
Smattering in some veterans that can get you through some tough times, but we'll get back to the Astros in game 161.
Well, sure, it's a long way to go,
and see how that happens.
31-20, that's a nice start.
It is, and you know
15
what?
15-8 on the road.
You can't take it away from them because you have to earn all of that. So the Reds finding some better pitching, finding some more hitting, those are two important things to have. Todd Frazier, 10 for 15 in his last four games. That's only three of the Reds have done that since the turn of the 19th. Oh, let's see, that would have been the 20th century. So 115 or so years. So it's the Reds, again, sometimes it just takes a little fire to get you burning, and now take advantage of that schedule. You're not playing teams, again, that are leading divisions. You have to go beat these teams because these are the games you have to win, just as importantly as the teams you have to beat at the top of the table. And that's what makes baseball great. You get a chance to do all of it, and you get plenty of chances to do so. Just don't get lapped. Stay in there, hang tight, and get back to pitching pretty well. And Reds have the bats. Votto came into spring training healthy. He's shown it earlier in the season. Frazier's going to be an all-star. Jay Bruce has been solid. The one piece of the puzzle they're missing, though, is all-star catcher Devin Mesoraco. He can't get healthy. He's been up and down and trying to get him healthy, and every time he has a rehab, he falls back a couple weeks. But, again, he had 20-something home runs last year. When you miss that bat out of your lineup, that doesn't help either.
They got a chance next week to make little hay as they go to the Cubs for four, and then they've got Pittsburgh a week out or 10 days out from that at Pittsburgh, and those are the two teams right ahead of them. It's a good Central once again. The Reds have got to write themselves up and get themselves into that grouping, and we'll have them the rest of the week, not tonight, but the rest of the week, 7 o'clock and then 4 o'clock on Saturday. We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Williams Brothers Healthcare Pharmacy is a family-owned business offering personalized expert advice on a wide range of pharmacy services. Find them at 574 Landmark Avenue. Williams Brothers, committed to creating customers for life. Thanks to Williams Brothers for being on board, as usual, every Monday and Wednesday.
333-2665 is a phone number. Real nice article over the weekend coming out of Colts camp about Andre Johnson, the Houston Texans' longtime wide receiver, and of course played at Miami, played with Frank Gore, played with Chuck Pagano, who recruited him. So some real nice stories about how that went on and how Chuck got him or helped get him to Miami. But neat to me to hear the guy, really be re-energized when he found out he was coming to Indianapolis for sure, to accepting the position here and just everything that's going on, and how quickly he realized just how good his quarterback is.
Was he not paying attention last year when
they
played on Houston? Was it Thursday night? It's 87-0 after 2 minutes into the second quarter. Would Luck had three touchdowns over 60 yards. Did he miss? Did he miss all that?
Defense.
Andre, what were you looking at then? Well, run, go deep, brother, because that's all you had to do that game. And the Texans did make a nice comeback then because their best offensive player, J.J. Watt, intercepted a pass and ran it back for a touchdown. It wasn't much going on the offensive side of things. And kind of a little slap there to Houston and Bill O'Brien about what was going on there, where Andre's like, all right, I'm out.
Yeah.
You guys got a different way of doing stuff? No problem. Best of luck to you, but I'm not sticking around.
Well, his quote was that Bill O'Brien told him he was going to start only certain games.
Sure.
And this is like, in March or February, he's telling him this. So Andre didn't like
Bill,
that.
Your last name's O'Brien, not Belichick.
Yeah,
take a deep breath, bro. Yeah, who's quarterback of Houston?
Talent.
Anybody know that is off the top of their head?
I don't.
See, that's a problem. And that's why Andre Johnson didn't care to stick around and didn't care to play when he was told to play. And again, he is not 39 years old. He's not 36 years old.
No,
he's not a spring
he's
chicken.
He's on the tail end.
But the problem is he's 6'3" and 220 pounds of steel. And that's the other good news. He doesn't have to run a 4.3 40. The Colts have two guys around him. Philip Dorsett signed on the weekend. He's ready to go. Mm-hmm. He's in. He's signed up. They've got the speed merchants. They need guys like Reggie Wayne who can go across the middle. Mm-hmm. Veteran guys that know not to get lit up like a Roman candle. Guys that know how to run routes properly, and Andrew Luck will find them. He doesn't need to be a guy that just says, well, geez, he never throws it to me, so I'm going to go run some Hakeem Nicks routes. I wonder why I never get the ball. That's not going to be Andre Johnson. No. He doesn't operate like that.
Well, he's a different player. I mean, let's be fair. I mean, Hakeem Nicks is a nice receiver. Darius Haywood-Bey does not even compare to Hakeem Nicks.
No.
But it's a similar jump on your way up to Andre Johnson, who's been a consummate pro up till now. He catches, what, he caught 10 balls in their season finale last year for 100 and some yards. He catches a lot of balls.
Doesn't sound
he runs
washed
great
up to
routes.
Me.
He was never the fastest guy out there, but he's not slow either. He's got real good
kind of
hands.
How many Pro Bowls he made if you got to take your shoes off there.
And it might be more important to this group that when you let Reggie Wayne go, you come in with another guy behind him who's a veteran player, who's a focused player, who does not seem to be necessarily just about himself. And that was a big, you know, a big question to me still is how that particular meeting room is going to be. Wide receivers are divas anyways, so what you didn't need is a whole bunch of them coming in and wanting to get their own numbers. Andre Johnson sounds like the one number he wants is the trophy number.
The ring. That's it. That's what all these guys play for. And when the young kids look at him too, they know who Andre Johnson is. That they're not asking what did you do again? Oh, how come right. you haven't been to Pro Bowl in 4 years?
Well, you got Dorsett from Miami coming in.
Sure.
You've got T.Y. Hilton who was from that area,
Florida,
anyways.
Whatever.
Yeah. So I mean, these guys
where
know
is he
very
from?
Well.
International.
He was I think it was international.
Because the new defensive backs from Atlantic. So you got to keep your FAs and UMs and everything else together. But the point is Pagano was down there when those guys were rocking it out 100 years ago, and he's got a connection to him. And if you want, you come in and you figure out a couple things. Whether you want to get on board, and like Johnson just told you, you think it's good, and then you get there, then you see number 12 in action, and you're like, oh, it's real good.
Yeah.
So that's not a problem moving forward. The problem for the Colts moving forward will be, can their defense stand up and do anything? That's not the offense. It's rarely the offense's problem. But you got to remember, about out of 16 games, there's going to be three or four clunkers the offense is going to throw out there. Nobody goes 16-0, and even Dan Marino didn't throw for 380 yards and four touchdowns and no interceptions week in and week out. It doesn't happen. So you've got to have another way. You've got to have plan B, and part of that plan B is defense, and part of the other plan B is Frank Gore. You've got to have a guy that can get you some tough yards in between the tackles. You've got to have guys that can catch the ball out of the backfield because that gives one more layer of problems for the defense to have. You can go – I'm out of fingers trying to tell you how many guys the Colts will have in the pattern over a three-down series, and that's a fantastic problem to have.
And Frank Gore doesn't seem to automatically fit into a spread you out with four
where do you go to college
receivers
again?
Offense. Miami.
Miami, there you go.
But I mean, body type and certainly skill level, I mean, you'd think you'd want another – kind of quick guy out there, given how much you're going to be spreading the field out. But in reality, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see the ability to pound in between the tackles with simply five offensive linemen with the field all spread out and the field having to be full of defensive backs out there to take care of all the wide receivers. That's the nice part is you can't stack the box with a stacked defense against Frank Gore most of the time if you're going to spread them out like that. So that's the intriguing part to me about
and
Frank Gore.
And Gore's still got a little pop in the tank where he can get a linebacker one-on-one and take care of that.
Look, I don't have the faith in this offensive line yet to go out and physically dominate up front, but if you spread it out a little bit like Indiana has the last couple of years and cause the team to play the entire field side to side in addition to vertically, to me, you get a big body in there. He's not great speed, but certainly he's going to break tackles if he gets one-on-one with a strong
he's
safety.
He's been around the block. If you look at his numbers, he's a king of fantasy football. Why? He catches passes.
Yeah,
he runs
everything
for a bunch of yards. And he's a guy that's pretty durable. He's not a guy you see –
He's consistent.
He's playing a lot.
You love running backs who catch a couple balls and are consistent every week. You don't want the guy who's 151 week and seven.
It's really simple how he stays involved in the offense. He produces. It's not hard. If it's the Trent Richardson 3.1 yards a carry, well then Luck's going to throw it 48 times a game. There's no way around it. Jack Muhort, what do they call these OTAs? I don't even know what that's short for. Organized team activities.
Yes.
Out to right tackle, getting some work in last week, so that's interesting. So that tells me that Godser Chirilis probably isn't where they hope
ready,
or want him
certainly
to be. Well, that high ankle sprain takes forever to heal, especially when you're a big guy. And, again, I think it just shows you, and I'm not putting an all-pro tag on Muhort just yet, but putting him to that position, he's played now everywhere but left tackle on the line.
Pretty much,
and that's a pretty astute draft pick. He doesn't have to be it'd be great if he was a 10-year road grader at left guard and that was that, but that's not sometimes how this league works because you got Harriman's that's in there. You've got some other guys you can move around, and if you have to move him to tackle, this is the time to try it.
We said it, going into the draft, to me, the offensive line questions were already answered from the standpoint of who you're going to go with into the season and into camp to try to solve the questions. The questions weren't necessarily solved and answered, but you had the guys already in place. You have, I mean, you got Chiarellis coming off injury. You got Donald Thomas coming off injury. These are guys you brought in for some pretty good money. Are they going to be able to compete in there? We're going to have to find out because they're the money that you've put forward in that regards. As you mentioned, you brought in Harriman's. You brought in several draft picks the last 3 or 4 years. The fact that Muhort jumped right in there and this Jonathan Harrison kid came in as an undrafted free agent tells you a little bit about Hugh Thornton and Khaled Holmes, the fact that they haven't been able to separate themselves. You got Lance
what
Lewis
else
is still in there.
What else is new?
They've got a bunch of bodies in there that they're ready to choose from. I don't know. I can't tell you exactly who they're going to be. I imagine Chiarellis is in there somewhere.
Yeah, it's just but not
right
playing
now,
right now.
Yeah,
right.
Right now he's healthy. But it does make you feel good, like you said, about Jack Muhort was a second-round draft pick. The fact that he's played center, he's played, I think, both guard spots, and now he's played right tackle late in the season. And they're already penciling him in, at least to a large degree. He's hurt himself right now, too. So a lot of questions still on that side of things. The ball's going to have to be out quickly for Andrew Luck, and luckily he's got a lot
new?
Of guys to throw it to.
Yeah, it's not like that's going to be any new system where they've just, hey, we've got to put this in now because we don't know what to do. That's not it. Colts signed Philip Dorsett. What was the 27th? That was last Thursday, Wednesday.
Middle of the week.
So that's the good news on there. So you don't have to worry about contract holdouts. You don't have
I think
to worry
it's
about
set it gets all the way to a possible fifth
junk.
Year there. So, you keep him around for a while. T.Y. Hilton will be a free agent, I believe, after this year. But
yeah, you have
certainly
no,
he's
you have no
the,
problem negotiating the with these guys to get them more money if they're performing, and I don't think anybody worries about that. I think that's the last thing the Colts worry about is what's going to happen with these guys' contracts, because you play yourself in or out of it. Whether someone you can afford them or not, that's one thing. But if you can, get a guy who performs at that level, and you have an excess of talent, an excess of riches, you can pick and choose how you want to move going forward. And I think that's interesting as well, because with this many weapons, everybody's going to look pretty good. Unless you drop the football, you're going to play.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be in the pattern. You're going to get after it. And you're going to give Andrew Luck a way to do it. And he's going to find you. You saw that last year. We'd sit here, and again, I love telling the story because I think it shows you how potent that offense is. We sit here on Monday and say, how many different guys did Luck complete the ball to? There's
nine
of them.
Yeah.
Nine. Now, some of them only would have one catch, but when Jack Doyle's in there getting a couple balls, my goodness.
We went a couple weeks when it was two or three catches for every one of those eight or nine
guys.
I mean, it's not like it was just one catch for five of them.
No, and it almost seems like the guy that you wanted to forget about early in the year, Ahmad Bradshaw, had eight or nine out of the backfield,
yeah.
And then later in the year, guys like Jack Doyle are catching a handful of balls a game. Where who do you stop? Who do you take it away? I mean, how many balls did Cody B. Fleener drop where he could add 5,000 more yards?
Yeah.
That's what makes it exciting, folks. I'm all for big defenses like the Bears or the Ravens or even some of the good Giant teams, but light the lamp. That's the fun stuff to watch. Well, you got to have a little bit of balance. I get all that, but if that offense is clicking and that offense can't be stopped, you know what? The Patriots defense looks really good when they're protecting the 35-3 lead.
Sure,
notice that?
Sure.
You notice how many yards they give up and how many points they don't when they're looking. They just pin their ears back and get completely after
it. Well, I like a defense here.
Yeah,
and there
so
too.
Do I. I'm
I was
with
excited
you.
To see Philip Holder's message last week about the observations from OTAs. And the first thing he mentions is the safety out of Florida, actually Central Florida, Clayton Gathers. A big guy, and they're projecting him also as a dime linebacker, so big enough that he can also play up in the box and make some tackles.
Is that the buck position?
Well, that's the spot where you need
is that the bandit?
You need a guy who can run and cover tight ends. You need a guy who can make some tackles also in there. And
D all the above.
I love a safety like that, a big physical guy who can also run a bit. So excited to see what he can do for this team, because the back end hadn't been all that exciting. They've been adequate. But it hasn't been all that exciting at that safety spot. But cornerback, they got some of the better cornerbacks as far as a group is concerned in the league. And Vontae Davis might be one of the best in the entire league. But
yep.
Safety, they needed some upgrading.
They do. And, again, if they don't have a lot to do on defense this year, I won't have any problem with any of that.
Okay.
Because that means the Colts' offense is on the field and just punishing people down. But, again, as we mentioned, that's going to happen probably 12 or 13 times. It's going to be those other three or four where the defense is going to have to stand up and be counted. And they've shown in the past when called on, usually not bad, except for the Patriots in big playoff games.
Yeah, but other than that, yeah. We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. You're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Again, Reds baseball not tonight, but the rest of the week, 7 o'clock all week long. They are in Philadelphia Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and San Diego comes to town Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The Saturday game will be a 4 o'clock start here on WGCL. Starting Thursday night, we have the NBA Finals. They get almost an entire week off.
They did, which is good.
They could use it. Certainly the Cavs could use it.
Everybody could use
it. They are banged up. They're not getting Kevin Love back. That's a huge loss for the playoffs anyways.
Klay Thompson got knee in the head. He's had concussion issues.
Curry went down before a game or two before that. Kyrie Irving's been banged up for,
look, if you're gonna
for
take the
Cavs also.
You're going to take the NBA Finals out to the 4th of July. What's another week? Who cares?
Sure.
If it's going to end on the June 17th or June 20th, who cares? I'd rather see what you could argue the two best teams quite easily. Golden State is on one of the best runs ever in NBA history that nobody knows about because they play every game at 10:30 at night Eastern time. And then you've got LeBron and obviously the Cleveland Cavaliers. So get them healthy. I'm glad they got a week. Get healthy, and then we got no excuses going into the game. You've got long-term injuries that have been injured. These guys get 6 days to get healthy. I mean, you don't get that during the season and they're playing. Yep. So give me your best product at the time when the most money is on the table, and I'm down with that. And I will watch every game that starts at 9:15 and ends at 12 o'clock.
These ought to be good. I mean, you've got the team out in Golden State gets a lot of credit for their offense, but let's be fair, they're a well-rounded team. They've got a bunch of talent on that team. And with Cleveland, this is a team that started off the year, and everybody was asking questions if LeBron James was nuts to go to Cleveland and just what they were going to do with that team. They made a few trades. Jogged things up a bit and really have everybody has bought into what there was their hugest weak in this at the beginning. This is an awful defensive team to start the year.
They needed to make
now
trades.
Now it can shut people down.
They had the number one pick. What's that tell you? That wasn't very good. So you had to shake it up a bit. Bringing LeBron in, LeBron wasn't going to go to Cleveland, Dave, if the cupboard was bare. He was going to let him pick the coach. That's fine. But he wasn't going to let him pick the team. And what did they do? They went out and got proven guys that could play. Kevin Love could play. J.R. Smith could play. I mean, Shumpert could play. Keep going. And, giving up Andrew Wiggins for three veteran-proven guys that can get it done in the league is a little bit different. So it's not like the cupboard was bare and LeBron has magically spread pixie dust over it. No, Cleveland put a team around him. They're not stupid. They knew the only way getting him back was not going to be based on his heart, was not going to be based on his emotion, was going to be putting a team around him to win. And if there's one thing we've seen with LeBron, we know that he doesn't need superstars to make it happen. He took a terrible Cleveland. You can't name one other guy on the team.
He's almost averaging a triple-double right now in the playoffs.
When they played when he got to the finals with San Antonio, you can't name one other guy on the team. Maybe Sideshow Bar, Zeldrunas Agauskas on that team. But that's the point. The point was the guys were so bad that when James left, they got two number one picks in 3 years. They got Anthony Bennett and they got Andrew Wiggins. I'm not making this up.
And
Kyrie Irving. That's how bad it was. 3 in 5 years or something ridiculous like that. It doesn't matter when exactly it was. When LeBron left, they went bad. When LeBron was there, they won games. It's not hard to figure out. He makes a difference. The problem is, does the likes of J.R. Smith, does the likes of Kyrie Irving, can those guys carry it on the night when LeBron goes 3 for 19? That's the question that has. He's going to have one or two of those. Can he afford to have one against Golden State? I don't think so.
Can he have four is the question.
No, he can't. He can have two. He might not be able to have one.
He can have three, but he can't have four.
Why? Golden State has the home court advantage. Go look up Golden State's record at home.
Oh, it's fantastic.
49-3?
Yeah.
48-3?
If that.
It doesn't happen very often, folks. So they can't have a bad night from LeBron in Cleveland because the math doesn't work out. You're not going to win in Golden State unless LeBron has one of those 15 games, which he's completely capable of doing. But remember, to get 15 assists means other guys have to be scoring.
So
other guys have to pull their weight as well. And it's a little bit easier, I think, with LeBron in this situation because he doesn't have to worry about stepping on Dwayne Wade's toes. He doesn't have to worry about blending in with Chris Bosh and figuring out how it works. In Cleveland, it's my ball. come with
well,
me.
Well, here's
I've done it. Here are my rings. You come on, come on. None of you guys have done anything.
He has that legitimacy. There's no question. Kyrie Irving has begun to buy back into it. They got rid of the other guard that they had at the beginning of the year.
Matthew Dellavedova's playing big minutes.
Yeah, Waiters was the guy that was a black hole. Yeah. They got rid of him. But I'll tell you what's interesting, too. They've got, of all people, J.R. Smith buying into this. They let J.R. Smith play a role, and he doesn't have to be, you know, the guy that takes 8,000 shots.
He'll take 7,999.
And that's great, as long as he makes some. But, I mean, you get guys like that buying in because you have that legitimacy behind you. But, again, the beginning of the season, it was questionable. I mean, everybody was saying, what's wrong with this team? Is this the right thing? They should blow it up now, which is stupid anyways. But, again, right now, LeBron James, 27.5 points a game in the postseason, 10.5 rebounds, 8.5 assists. That's almost a triple double.
Who have they beat?
Well, they beat Atlanta, which was easier than anybody thought it was going to be.
Atlanta had two guys.
Boston in the first round.
Atlanta had two guys this year score 30 or more points.
And beat Chicago.
Two. And the Bulls can't score. Yep. So now it's a whole different ball of onions. And Golden State puts the ball in the basket for fun. Yeah. The question's going to be not whether Cleveland can defend them. It's going to be whether Cleveland can keep up with them.
Well, let's be fair here. There's a bunch of young talent on this Golden State team, but it is just that. It is young talent that has not had to prove it at this level. I mean, Andrew Bogut and Andre Iguodala are the two guys that have been forever
outside
in the league.
Outside of LeBron James, there's nobody on this number one draft pick collecting Cleveland team who's been on that stage
You have LeBron James.
That's fine.
That's the
one man cannot beat five, and we've seen that time and time and time again because you have to guard Thompson, you have to guard Bogut, you have to guard my man from Michigan State,
Draymond Green.
You got to guard Harrison Barnes,
yep.
And you got to guard Iguodala. That's a very potent on-paper lineup. Golden State is a 12-5 favorite, 2.5-1. So if you like yourself some LeBron, you can get a really nice price on him for the Cavs to win the title.
There you go. Golden State has home court. We'll give you a little more preview on that on Wednesday, along with the attempt for a Triple Crown winner on Saturday. And we will talk to you Wednesday night, so join us then, folks. You've been in the zone.